Welcome back. You're watching StockWatch with me, Bright Khumalo. Tackling your stock-related questions this evening are Gary Boyson from Rand Swiss and Derek Janssen van Rensburg from Anchor. Send those questions via SMS to 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag StockWatch. Gentlemen, welcome to the show. It's been an interesting day of trading, to say the least, and obviously US markets are still trading. The last time I checked, they're in the green. I'll start with you, Gary. You seem, you know, excited about this market. What's happening locally? How did we close, and how are we looking in the US?
Yeah, well, I don't know. It's been an incredibly busy day. I mean, the number of results and trading statements that came out today was absolutely ridiculous. And at lunchtime, we were kind of looking okay. But by the end of the day, we were looking absolutely amazing. We also had US GDP numbers out, and that maybe had a little bit to do with it. But there's just so much news flow. So, I mean, all share index was, we closed up, well over 2%. Industrials, we saw a big reversal in Naspers process. That lifted industrials well over 3%. We have financials and resources up around 2.5%. And I think, you know, we had, like I said, just so much news flow. I mean, Amplats obviously announced an end to their strike. So that kind of, I think, lit a fire and all the platinum miners. Amplats over 7% up, Implats up 6.31%. So they're doing well. Richemont rose 4.5%. So all over the place. We got news that African Bank is going to be buying Grindrod Bank. We got Nampak Group results. We got a Mr. Price trading statement. We had Sorgho Sun results. We had Old Mutual voluntary trading statements.
We'll talk about all of that. Finished
their strike. I mean, it's been intense. What can I say? It's been an incredible day of news flow. So difficult to kind of keep a finger on everything, but it is nice to see that the markets are green for a change.
Yeah. Look, talking about green markets, Derek. There's been a lot of news flow, say, from Jan to where we are today. But most of the news were negative. There was, you know, a high shortage of good news. And now we're starting to see the good news flowing slowly and the markets are turning. What did you make of those GDP numbers, talking about good news? And what other good news are potentially out there that we could see that could maybe, you know, impact our markets and international markets?
So I think it's very important just to kind of look at the obvious. Obviously, the last couple of months on global markets have been tough. And actually, since the beginning of the year, it certainly has been a tough period to be invested in equities through the course of 2022. Where we sit at the moment is a very negative sentiment environment. And all eyes have obviously been on inflation and how quickly inflation has been climbing. So, you know, to kind of counteract the sort of interest rate cycle or the move that we're moving into, or the state of the interest rate cycle going into this higher interest rate cycle, you certainly do need some GDP to kind of back the increase in interest rates that we're seeing on a global level at the moment. So that GDP number certainly does support the sort of idealism that we can essentially avoid a recession from a developed world perspective. And I think that gave quite a lot of buoyancy to markets from a global perspective. You know, markets always overreact to the upside as well as to the downside. And I do get the sense that over the last couple of weeks, the pendulum has certainly swung quite far into that negative sentiment space. And as we know, pendulums swing the other way. So I do get the feeling that we're starting to move into better times for the rest of, call it 2022, and hopefully we do start to see some positivity come back to equities as an asset class, and we start to see a lot of these, call it treasury yields, come down from the levels that they're at the moment, and that gives a bit of buoyancy to equities. So as you said, quite a lot of buying taking place, particularly in that tech space offshore at the moment, obviously on our local market, lots of news flow today. But certainly positive to see that positive sentiment starting to come through into the market today. Hopefully we do see a continuation of this as we move through the course and into the start of the next month.
Yeah, I like sort of, you know, the natural good news flow, not the manufactured ones like we've been seeing from China in the past month or so. So we don't want manufactured good news. We want like real stuff from the economy, you know, stuff on the ground. Let's jump into our stocks and questions. This one is from the SMS line, which says, what's happening with MTN? It's heading south. This is from Robbie. Derek, MTN, why is it heading south?
So I think, obviously you've got to keep an eye on the Nigerian operation when it comes to MTN and obviously on the ground. And there's been one or two sort of hiccups that have taken place from a Nigerian perspective. Sort of tariffs induced in terms of calls. They're kind of curbing the growth sort of forecast that analysts typically put in place when you start predicting the earnings outflow from a Nigerian perspective. That said, I still think the fundamental story is still very much intact with MTN. Sitting at about 160 odd rand a share, yes, it's performed well over the last couple of years, but I certainly think it's still well positioned to continue that sort of earnings momentum path that it's on at the moment. So, a high oil price is certainly going to add some buoyancy to the Nigerian economy, and I think that's going to see a bit of a flow through in terms of MTN earnings from a Nigerian perspective. All that said, at the current levels, I certainly think it does actually look interesting. And comments made previously on Stockwatch, I certainly think the right price for MTN is 200 to 220, to be honest. So at these levels, I think it looks interesting. It's pulled back off its highs. It's always good to see a healthy pullback in any share price or any index for that matter. And I think it's well positioned to probably climb higher from these levels at this stage.
And if you look at the geared structure of MTN, Zakhele Futhi, you deep in the money at 162. So, can that unwind quickly so you all take our monies? We've seen what happens when you don't take profits, Gary. What are your thoughts on MTN?
I think Derek summed it up, but I think also, the viewer, pointing out that MTN's share price is heading south is maybe a little bit unfair given the context that MTN, the environment that MTN is
Operating in.
operating in, just from a financial market point of view. I mean, if you look at, let's say, top 40 for the year, year to date is down just a touch under 6%. MTN's only down 5.6%. So it's actually outperforming the top 40 at the moment. So, I mean, it's always terrible to look at it from a relative point of view when you've got cash in a position. But the fact is that it has held up fairly well in very, very difficult markets. Now, I think also to Derek's point earlier, I mean, if you look at just the consensus kind of price target on the analysts that the institutional analysts that cover it, they've got a target, like the consensus kind of median target is at 206 rand a share. So I kind of think that with this sell-off that we're seeing, which is clearly a broad-based, highly correlated sell-off, to pick up a quality business like MTN here, for a potential re-rating, I think is a good idea. If you look at just in terms of earnings, I mean, if you look at earnings, let's say 3 years out, I mean, you're talking about a stock on a forward 3 year PE of under 10. I mean, this is not expensive for a company like MTN. It's not particularly expensive where it is. Very, very solid business. As Derek was saying, oil prices being higher in Nigeria are certainly going to help. Nigeria is still, like, just in terms of revenue, accounts for around a third of MTN's revenue and also about a third of profits as well. So yes, significant exposure there, but high oil prices is good for MTN. And I think also with the listing of MTN securities in Nigeria, I think that the idea that Nigeria is a part owner of MTN and that MTN isn't this foreign entity that has come in to take money from Nigerian citizens is it's a good it's a good shift in perception for MTN specifically among Nigerians. So the idea of, like, an exorbitant fine coming out like we saw previously. Yes, it's always going to be a risk, but I think it'll be a lot more difficult for the NCC to push something like that through.
Yeah, interesting. You've also mentioned relative returns, right? So my clients always tell me you can't eat relative returns. We have a question here from Ezekiel who says Old Mutual looks cheap. Is it a good idea to buy it for the next 10 years? If not, which insurance company should one be looking at these levels? Derek?
Yeah, so I think the insurance sector as a whole has come off, in the short term. I think a lot of it is to do with some of the unknowns, and this is really the trick with insurance businesses is obviously, you get hit with unknowns like the flooding that took place in KZN, for example, and the massive short-term payouts that you've got to obviously take on book and then obviously provide going forward. So Old Mutual as a business, I think at these levels does start to look quite interesting. Yeah, you could probably. I tend to sway a little bit more towards Santam as an insurer, and I think that that business, from a fundamental perspective, is a little bit more easier to analyze, and predictability of earnings for me is a little bit more conclusive as opposed to Old Mutual. Old Mutual is a big behemoth business, you know, so there's lots of moving parts within that stable, and you've really got to keep your finger on the pulse, you know. Over a six any sort of year-end result or 6 month result, you've got to keep very close eye on all the moving parts within that business. So Santam is probably my preferred pick in this environment. It just gives me a sense of you know, more certainty around earnings. And I think when it comes to insurers, you just got to keep an eye on those provisions and how much they're either under provide or over provide. And then obviously as you move forward into the next 12 months, it's how much of those provisions essentially get written back and how they can actually contribute to earnings. So they look interesting, they've come off their highs, but yeah, my preferred pick would probably be Santa.
Okay, Gary, 60 seconds elevator pitch on Old Mutual before we go to the break.
Well, I don't know if I've got an elevator pitch, but I mean they came out with a voluntary trading update today, so I mean we've got I think a better sense of how they've fared, given all the disruptions that they've experienced, from a COVID point of view, from all the kind of strange things that have been going on in the last year or so. So, looking at it, they've already announced that their provisions are more than adequate. We did see their funds under management to drop around 3%, but the value of new business was up 53%. So it was very, very strong growth there. I mean, obviously coming off a low base as well. It seems like their risk and annuity businesses are a little bit under pressure, just in terms of new sales, but funeral sales are very, very good. Also doing okay in the life on the life side of it. So, again, I we're not currently invested in Old Mutual. We prefer Sanlam, not Santam. I just think it's a little bit, operationally a little bit better. But as Derek said, I mean, these businesses, I mean, you've got to look at the embedded values. They're fairly difficult to analyze, and there is a high degree of forecasting risk just because of, I mean, they're essentially there to, if the actuaries get it wrong, and
Who
you
are
get
we?
one of these one of these stuff, but if they get it wrong and one of these fat tail events come along, something like a COVID-19 that hasn't been priced correctly, I mean, they can take significant punishment. But I don't. I mean, Old Mutual also not a bad business, but for us, Sanlam is probably the preferred.
We've got a question here from Rob, who says, "Kindly ask the panel their ideas, for the long term." Investment in Adcock and Reinet. So I'll split this one into two. Who wants to take Reinet? Who wants to take Adcock? I'll start with you, Gary.
I guess I'll take Adcock, even though I haven't looked at Adcock in a while. I think certainly like we're obviously in a very, very difficult period at the moment. So, looking at something like a healthcare company, they typically are more defensive, and we're already talking about relative returns for the year. And you can kind of see just how well a company like Adcock is holding up, just because it's essentially it's a consumer staple. It does OTC prescription drugs. It's focused on something that it's essentially an FMCG company that isn't going to disappear anytime soon. It doesn't have that cyclical nature. And because of that, you've seen the share price a lot more stable over the years. So it has actually generated 2% in the kind of all share indexes for the year. So it looks fairly stable. I mean, it's not a well-covered company, but I mean, if you do look at the kind of forward PE again, let's say you look out 1 year, it's trading on about a 12 PE currently, which is also not particularly expensive. And you kind of get the feeling that a company like Adcock is potentially a little bit overlooked, like so many of kind of the small and mid-cap stocks on our exchange, and you're probably going to get a little bit more value than you would if it was a large kind of pharmaceutical, something like a Johnson and Johnson or one of the big international kind of defensive brands. Because I think there is a sector rotation into the healthcare space at the moment, just as people look for a little bit of stability in their
And
earnings.
safety.
You look at their earnings. I mean, if you look at their earnings profile, let's say going back, to 2016, I mean, steady growth, a slight dip off in 2020 and 2021, obviously because people aren't, buying, maybe not going in and getting as sick as they were because they were locked in their houses, but certainly not significant. And that kind of growth profile is certainly returning. You look at revenue throughout the pandemic, very, very stable. So that's the kind of business that you're investing in. Maybe not going to shoot the lights up, but certainly fairly defensive.
Okay, fantastic. Rob, sorry, Derek.
So just talking about the Rainet question, I mean, I guess they obviously came out with unaudited interim financial numbers yesterday. And, just going through those numbers, I must say it looks like the business has been through quite a tough period. Obviously, we understand that we're sort of digesting the legacy of some of the COVID impact, etc. A very, call it diverse business, but essentially a business that only delivered group revenue of about 11% growth. Typically in the past, this has always been a very strong dividend payer. At the moment, not so much so. It looks like the sort of cash on hand is just enough to kind of cover the costs at the moment. There's all sorts of components to the business in terms of the electrical engineering segment, for example. Applied electronics segment is also quite key in this stable. But I think just looking at it, it has been on a bit of a downward trend. And I think that the numbers released yesterday are kind of indicative of where the share price should be at these levels. So in terms of a turnaround story, they do talk about prospects, they talk about stronger returns looking forward. But my feeling is I'm not that convinced just yet. I would like to see those better than expected results that they allude to in the prospects be delivered over the next 6 months, and then I can kind of re-look at it. So, interesting result, obviously digesting quite a difficult period over the last 6 months or even the last 12 months. So, keep an eye on it, but not ready to buy it just yet.
Okay, fantastic. I like both those answers. We've got a question here from Richard Bone, who I know very well, says, "Hi guys, I'm down about 30% from the highs a few months back in big tech." In brackets, it says the FANGs. Is that it? Do we bail out now and go into high value slash dividend type stocks, or hold on? Is big tech dead? I'll start with you, Gary. I know you follow these big techs very closely.
Is big tech dead? That's a great question. I wish I knew. I don't think it. Listen, look at the FANG stock. Listen, and FANG is a very loaded group of companies, and I think they're very different companies within the FANG stock. So, I mean, we've been fairly negative on Netflix for a long time. From a Netflix point of view, I think that the competition in that industry is just rising so quickly. I mean, we prefer the Disney. I think what's happening in Disney Plus is very, very exciting. But if you look at something like Google or Apple, I mean, these are absolute juggernauts in the industry. And what we had, it was it's probably about a month and a half ago, we had all the kind of the non-big tech, the Zooms and the DocuSigns and all the kind of almost super high-priced YOLO. We're going to go buy tech because the stonks only go up.
Yes.
Those kind of stocks collapse, but you had the Microsofts, the Googles, the Apples, the kind of blue chip tech managed to hold up a lot longer. The bottom kind of fell out of that about a month ago, but I get the sense that they are just high quality businesses, and it doesn't seem to be like an earnings unwind. And it really, I suppose, it depends why you're buying it. If you're a short term trader, I think we could see maybe a year, maybe 2 years of this kind of very choppy sideways markets. You might not see the big recovery that we saw after 2020 in big tech stocks, because I don't think that excitement is still there. That said, these are still incredibly exciting businesses, and if you look at what they actually do, if you're an investor for 5 to 10 years. And you're not trying to predict when the turnaround is going to happen. You look at Google and you look at just the IP that they have inside their big data, what they're doing in terms of AI at the moment, what they're doing in terms of self-driving, some of the moonshots they have. It's not just a search and advertising business. You look at what's happening in the YouTube numbers underneath. It is very, very exciting business. It's just people are not willing to pay what they would, a year ago for it. So for me, I personally would not be selling your kind of big tech. I think you kind of shutting the stable door after the horse has bolted. I would hang in there, and if anything, probably be adding. But realize that you're going to be in for your or potentially could be in for 2 or 3 years of not spectacular returns. But the problem is, you don't know when they're going to re-rate. You don't know when people are suddenly going to get exciting, excited again. And one of the things that we were talking about in our research meeting this morning is, if we suddenly see inflation moderating in a big way, and we see the Fed's PCE target being achieved in 2023, you could get a huge rush back into risk and a huge rush back into equity. And if
Yes.
you've sold your FANG stocks down here, you are going to be crying.
Yeah, well, I hope Richard is watching because that's solid advice. Do you have anything to add there, Derek?
So I think Gary's actually summed it up very well there. So what we've actually seen is two key elements out of what Gary's just said is really a re-rating that's taken place. That's on the back of a high inflationary environment and moving into this increasing interest rate environment. So what we've seen is more palatable type valuations coming through on big tech at the moment, particularly in that FANG space. That said, I also think that if the language starts to change out of the Fed, these things could again re-rate quite quickly to the upside. So you don't want to be left not invested. I think within that FANG space, you also need to pay very special attention to the companies that have got a lot of cash on balance sheet. So that talks to the likes of the Googles and the Apples that can actually weather the storm, where you've got that cash on balance sheet, you're looking to grow your business, whether it's by acquisition, and you look into those sort of second or even third tier type sort of tech players, you're going to get great opportunities to buy great businesses to diversify your overall portfolio as you move into the next 2 to 3 year period. So something like an Apple or a Google is extremely well positioned in this environment. Don't expect any great shakes, as Gary said, to the upside. There will be continued volatility as we move through the next 12 months, but I certainly wouldn't be left not owning the likes of a Google or an Apple for that matter. Those are great companies with strong cash on balance sheet, and I would expect them to be able to weather this very high inflationary environment extremely well and be positioned for the next cycle to the upside extremely well.
Yeah, so no, I definitely like both those comments. That was fantastic. And just to sum it up for Richard Bone, just buy the dip. I know you have the cash to buy the dip. Just buy the dip, bro. We've got a question here on the SMS line which says, when RMI unbundles everything and is only main, sorry, and it's only outsurance remaining, will they still charge a management fee? This is from Pat. This is a very good question because once it's outsurance, it's an operational business, right, Gary?
Yeah, I'm assuming they won't, but I'll leave that one to Derek. I looked at the RMI, kind of like unbundling probably a year and a half ago. So yeah, I would, I like, I'm assuming they wouldn't, but I can't say that with any degree of certainty.
Derek?
Just to add to that, I mean, you actually don't know. I mean, at the end of the day, holding companies do tend to attract quite high fee structures, and I think just given the environment that we're in at the moment, and PSG is probably a good case example where you're starting to see some unbundlings come to the fore and the distribution of a lot of these assets coming to market, RMI distributing outsurance. There's no reason to actually charge these holding company fees. I guess one also needs to keep quite a close eye on RMI and how it transforms itself post unbundling the quality assets within the stable. So I would assume that you do not see high management fees going forward. I think that what you're going to see is that holding structure collapse, and it's just how they define themselves in the new sort of look and feel of what RMI is essentially at the end of the day without the outsurance component.
Okay, I'm sorry, Derek. It's stock pick time. We only have 2 minutes left, so I'll start with your stock pick, Derek.
Okay, so tonight I'm keeping it local. My stock pick tonight is Mr. Price.
Let's see that
As
chart.
we as we say again.
No, you can go.
Okay, so tonight I'm picking Mr. Price. It came out of the trading statement this morning, just basically alluding to earnings per share increasing 24 to 29%. Headline earnings number looks good. There's a bit of insurance revenue that came through from the looting crisis that we saw over the last 6 to 12 months. But I certainly think that this is a business that's come down in line with the markets and come down probably a little bit too far. So a little bit more of a sentiment play towards, call it retailers as a sector. I think the banks are also sold off a little bit too far. So those are also looking quite interesting. Sitting at just above 200 rand a share, I anticipate the right sort of rating for this share price to take you towards that 240. And I think that the acquisitions that they're doing at the moment are certainly bolt-on acquisitions, and they're in a good place in this increasing inflation in inflationary environment to actually continue that acquisition process. So I like the business at 200, looks interesting. I expect to see higher prices as we move through the course of this year.
Okay, so Derek is very bullish on banking and most importantly, missed the price. You, Gary?
I'm going to keep it in the in kind of the same sector and also, I suppose, same level of share price. So I'm going to take ShopRite Holdings as my stock pick.
Okay.
Also, it's trading around 208 at the moment. You know, consensus is for to get to around 240, but I think that might be a little bit light. It's had a nice pullback here again, just on the back of an overall market pullback. We were talking about relative management earlier. Over the last 3 months, it's pretty much tracked the all-share index lower. But you get the sense that I think the recovery could be quite swift for ShopRite. It's obviously buying out some of the assets of Massmart. I think they will, you know, if history is anything to go by, I think they're probably going to manage that a little bit better. I still love their online delivery business. I think Checker 6060 is a real win for the business. And I also think that the other, I get the sense that some of the other grocers specifically are scrambling a little bit. So the likes of Pick and Pay with their ASAP delivery business now, you know, splitting the business and trying to do, you know, I think they call, you know, the kind of red version. They've got Box at the middle.
Okay,
got
Gary.
Business. And I think that leads to a lot of execution risk in the competitors, and I think ShopRite is going to take market share.
Yeah, Gary, sorry, I have to cut you there. We've run out of time. Thank you very much. You're also very bullish, by the way, on ShopRite. Thanks, Gary and Derek. Thanks to my guests, Gary Boyson from Rand Suisse and Derek Janssen van Rensburg from Anchor. Join Zinati tomorrow for the Friday edition of StockWatch. That's tomorrow at 19:30. Have a good evening.